This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Welcome to another edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast / simultaneous Facebook Live. I am Daniel Jones, the Tribune's Mizzou football writer, and with me is Cameron Teague Robinson, the basketball writer. We've changed our setup a little bit. If you're watching on Facebook Live, trying to get a little creative with our presentation, but we have a lot to talk about today. We have football. We have basketball. Basketball season is a week away tomorrow.
Yeah,
we're taping Thursday, so if you're listening on Friday, the basketball season is 7 days away, and a massive football game against Florida is just 3 days away. Is it, well, from today. So if you're 2 days away from today, so I'm all mixed up. Right. 2 days away from today, 1 day away from tomorrow, Mizzou will play Florida in a very important SEC matchup that could have, probably should have, bowl implications for the Tigers. Right. But before we get too far, saw an interesting thing on Twitter today, which was Heisman odds for probably like 25 players, select number of players. Guess who was on the list?
Well, I've already seen this the script, so I'm just going to guess Drew Lock.
Mr. Drew Lock.
Yeah.
At the nice payday, well, I guess if you were to bet and win, of 5,000 to 1. Heisman, so he's on the list.
Right, right.
I can't imagine what it would take for Drew Lock to actually win the Heisman.
A lot of people would have to fall off.
With Mizzou,
yeah.
Well, yeah. Like a lot of people would probably have to get hurt.
Yeah.
A lot of people would just have to stop playing.
Mizzou would have to win out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But 5,000 to 1, and I'm trying to think, I mean, like Leicester City, when they won the Premier League 2 years ago, they were 5,000 to 1.
Hey, so it's happened before.
It's not
impossible.
Exactly. It is not impossible. What would you bet on at 5,000 to 1? Is there anything in sports where you would take that bet?
I don't know.
Like, what were the Browns to win the Super Bowl before the season started?
Oh, probably worse than 5,000. Probably worse than that.
Would you take that bet? Would you put like $5 down?
I mean, yeah, because you're not really losing much, and the paydays could be crazy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe if I was a betting man, which I'm usually not, but I would. Yeah, I should rephrase. I'm not usually with sports.
Okay.
But if I was, I don't know. I'd take that bet, although not at this point with Drew Lock. I just don't think there's any way that happens.
Right.
But if you were to tell me it was 5,001 at the beginning of the year, I probably would have taken that.
Okay. Let me ask, what do you think is more likely? Drew Lock wins the Heisman, or the Cavs somehow, or the Browns somehow find their way into the playoffs?
Drew Lock wins the Heisman.
Yeah. More likely we're than the Browns going to the playoffs.
Yeah, we're going on 16.
All right. Also, so we were a little late on this podcast because the news broke just before we were starting that Chris Trevino is going to be the new play-by-play or color commentator for Mizzou basketball on a full-time basis throughout the season.
Right, right.
You just did a story about it. Right. Talked to Chris a little bit about it.
Yeah, I talked to him on my way. Actually, just running out of my apartment to get to the office, just talking to him on the phone. He's pretty excited. Him and Mike Kelly have history going dating back to their times. I mean, they did the Missouri-Kansas game at the Sprint Center, and then they'd done different Mizzou games in the past. Specifically, he mentioned the 93-94 year, and Mizzou was really, really good. Obviously, 28-4.
Yeah.
Back when the Big Eight was still a thing.
Yeah.
So he's really excited to get back in this, and I know the big thing for him is he was glad KOMU allowed him to still keep his KOMU duties as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's pretty excited, and obviously we both know Chris pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be a busy guy between his KOMU responsibilities and what he's doing with the basketball team, but probably not a nicer guy that it could happen to,
no,
I don't think.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that'll be exciting. The first game
and
is
at least
Friday.
That's a familiar voice. So many people knew Gary Link's voice.
Yeah,
For them
exactly.
to replace him with somebody that everybody already knows, I imagine that was a pretty big part of their search.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So let's talk about this football game.
Yeah.
Saturday. Mizzou plays Florida at 11 a.m. It's a blackout game.
Really quick. When we we did our, what was the fourth home game they lost? Was that the Auburn game?
Yes.
When they lost that Auburn game, would you have thought, like I just said the words big game for Mizzou.
Mm.
Would you have thought that this game would be a game that could determine Mizzou's bowl hopes?
No, because I think at that point in time I was already
off the.
I had already pretty much considered it to be a moot point. Because Florida, I mean, at that point in time, Florida was, that was week four. They were 3-1. Their only loss was to Michigan.
Right, right.
They had just beat Kentucky. So yeah, it didn't seem very realistic to me that Florida wouldn't be very good. Tennessee didn't look like they were going to be as bad as they are. Tennessee looks like maybe the worst team in the SEC.
Right, right.
I mean, right there with Mizzou and Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt had just beaten K-State, so they looked pretty good. Like, the back end of the schedule looked pretty formidable,
right,
like,
right.
in week four. But now that we're in week eight going into week nine, it's like, wow, this has really opened up. Florida is in
turmoil.
Yeah. The coach has been fired. And this is kind of what I want to get into. So not only is Missouri playing a team that just fired its coach, but they're dealing with a team that's lost its best running back, Malik Davis, last week to injury. One of their best linebackers at the beginning of the season, Marcel Harris, to an Achilles injury. They had nine players. They have nine players currently suspended because they were caught with credit card fraud.
Right, right.
So in trouble with the law. So nine players are out for that reason. So you have a coaching change, injuries, credit card fraud, and a three-game losing streak. So just,
and you got a team committing credit card fraud.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
That's kind of crazy.
So, yeah, I mean, you couldn't envision a better scenario for Missouri to play Florida.
Right, right.
A team that's, like, really had Mizzou's number the last 2 years and really bossed Mizzou around.
And you got them at home.
Yeah, 2 years ago at home and then last year in Florida, and Mizzou does get them at home. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think the Tigers will be able to take advantage of all this going on in the Florida program going into this week?
I've picked against Mizzou. I think last week was the first week I picked Mizzou to win since, like, their, like, early season struggles. I would actually pick Mizzou again this week.
To cover or to win?
To win.
Okay.
I think you're talking about the back half of the schedule is pretty, I don't want to say easy, but there's winnable games in the back of the schedule.
100%.
This is one of those winnable games. I think these next two, this and Tennessee, are two of their most winnable games. I think they do win this game. I just don't know. I mean, now you could see Florida coming out with emotion because of everything that's going on, but you can also see them coming out like everything. Like, how are we supposed to focus on football with everything happening?
Yeah. Well, I will say that from a lot of times the way things look from the outside aren't really representative of what's going on inside the
100%.
Locker room. So, yeah, it could have a positive effect on Florida and how they approach this week that, you know, finally they have something that they can rally around.
And football is a way to kind of get your mind off everything. Like, you've been dealing with the media all week, and you can finally just get on the field and play football.
Yeah, and, I mean, the Gators haven't had problems with Drew Lock.
Right.
They shut him down in pretty extreme fashion last year. So, I mean, I think a lot of people thought about this. I wrote about this in today's paper. A lot of people thought this way going into the LSU game last year.
Mizzou, we were just talking about that.
Mizzou had just beat Delaware State, beat the brakes off of Delaware State, which, looking back, might have been the worst, like, college football team in Division I, all of Division I last year. But, like, they had just torched them, and the offense looked great. And then they were on a bye.
Right.
And then LSU had lost to Auburn and then fired Les Miles after what had been kind of a controversial last couple years with him. And so you go into that game like, all right, Mizzou's on the up. Mm-hmm. They feel pretty good. LSU's on shaky ground, and LSU just
mops the floor with them.
Yeah, 42-7 was the final score of that game. Mizzou allowed over 600 yards of offense. So it all comes down to players. I believe it was Geis that just torched Mizzou last year on the ground for LSU's running back. And so it comes down to players. And now that we're talking about that, I think Mizzou does have a couple of advantages, notably at quarterback.
Yes.
Drew Lock is
playing incredible right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about dating back to the Kentucky game.
Yes. Yeah. 4 weeks in a row, and Florida has problems at quarterback. So they brought in interim coach Randy Shannon. One of the first things he did was open up the quarterback competition because the guy who had been doing it, Felipe Franks, for Florida, was not very good. He was averaging less than 130 yards per game passing. And so they opened it up. They opened up the quarterback competition, and Malik Zaire,
Notre Dame transfer,
won the job. He's going to make his first start with the Gators on Saturday. So the quarterback position's all up in the air for Florida right now. If Malik Zaire was a better quarterback going into the season, you would assume he would have started.
Right.
So he might, you know, serve as a shot in the arm for the offense, but certainly things aren't settled there. As we mentioned earlier, Malik Davis, Florida's best running back, not going to play. Hurt his knee last week. So there's all kinds of problems on an already banged up Florida offense, which has kind of been like Florida's offense has
been a
disaster for 3 years.
So I
think that there's definitely room for Missouri to take advantage and maybe even an opportunity for their defense. I don't know what. When I think about this defense, the first thing, the one thing that I think they have to improve upon is getting turnovers.
Missouri's defense?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there anything else that you think would be of the utmost priority?
No, that's the main thing for me. Every time you watch them, it's just either they're going to get a stop or, I mean, they're going to get scored on. I mean, obviously, those are always the two choices, I mean, the two options. But you would like your defense to, if Drew Lock throws an interception like he did the first series against Idaho, you'd like him to be able to find a way to get the ball back.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'd have to double check on this, but I'm pretty sure Missouri hasn't won the turnover battle in a single game all season.
I don't think they have either.
They're still one of the worst in the country in terms of turnover margin per game at like minus 1.6, I want to say. So still not very good, and part of that is turnovers. They haven't turned the ball over much in the last couple weeks, really since the bye week, but the problem has been defensively getting the ball back. They never do that, and that puts so much pressure on your third down defense, because if you aren't getting turnovers, then that means every time the defense steps on the field, it has to make a third down stop.
And they have not been good at those all year.
And they haven't, So you're –
yeah.
If one of those drives ends in a turnover, that's one time you don't need a third down stop to end a drive, or, you know, block a field goal or make a red zone stop.
And there's a correlation of why the defense is struggling. Like, you struggle on third downs, you can't get turnovers.
Right.
You're going to struggle.
Exactly. Yeah. If you can do one of those things, it kind of takes the pressure off. But not doing either of those things is a major problem. So I think that's a big focus for Missouri in this game. They have to win the turnover battle. We've been saying that for 4 weeks. We said it against Kentucky, Georgia. It really wasn't as big a deal the last 2 weeks because the offense was just so overwhelming, but it'll be really important this week when it won't be so overwhelming. Who are your key players in this game? If you had to pick one guy that you would have your eyes on.
I feel like it's an, I don't know. I feel like it's an obvious one just because how well he's played the last few weeks. But I just I think I don't know if I'm more intrigued to see how a defense can slow him down. But it's Albert O.
Yeah,
it's just that he's just tore defenses apart the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see how if he can continue that, and if he doesn't, how Mizzou, I guess, distributes the ball. How they get Emmanuel Hall and Jamon Moore, who have been playing very well as of recently. How that kind of goes, because that, I mean, Albert O has been incredible. Their passing game to their tight ends has been very, very good the last two weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I think Albert O and Emmanuel Hall and Jamon Moore's success all are kind of in tandem. They all create opportunities for each other.
Right.
On the offensive side, I think he's going to be really big. Florida is pretty decent in the red zone at getting stops, and that's like Albert O's bread and butter, is get him in the end zone. One of the passes that Drew Lock, one of the touchdown passes he threw to Albert O last week against UConn, looked like somebody throwing the ball into the post to a big man.
Yeah,
it was basically Albert O posted up like this guy and catching the ball like one like this, you know.
Yeah.
And Drew Lock just kind of it didn't even look really like a traditional throw. It was just kind of like a like kind of put it up
yeah,
there.
Go
like,
get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that against Connecticut works pretty well. It won't be as effective against Florida, but that is where Albert O at 6'5 has to be important.
Right.
But kind of what I was going back to, I think him and Jamon Moore and Emmanuel Hall, they're all tied together, because the first drive against Connecticut, all the passes went to Jamon Moore on the sideline. Mm-hmm. So defenses kind of start to gravitate. They push out to guard him, and Emmanuel Hall leaves the middle of the field open one-on-one with Albert O.
Right.
And he's so fast. If you get a play action pass that just gives a linebacker pause for 1 second. He's fast enough and big enough to where that's enough for him to get open.
100%. And it's very difficult for linebackers to account for him unless you're a Georgia or an Alabama or, I mean, not to say those are the only two teams with linebackers that can do that, but you have to have linebackers who are athletic enough to keep up with an uber athletic Albert O.
Right. Right, and they exist, but they're hard to find. Exactly. Yeah, they have to be fast enough to keep up and big enough to kind of push them around a little bit, or a safety to do that. But if you're bringing safeties up, then you're leaving them exposed on the back end.
Exactly.
So there are ways to defend it, just nobody's figured it out yet.
Right.
And the joke was Barry Odom this week in the press conference said, now that you're asking about it, everybody's going to figure out how to,
exactly.
how to
slow
defend
down.
It. Yeah. So that'll be big, that play, the play action pass to the tight end over the middle has been unstoppable. I imagine at some point this year it will be stopped.
It's not even that easy in Madden.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's because there are plays in Madden
that are like really easy.
There's like holes in the defense. Like the defense can't figure out to guard that guy on that route.
Exactly.
You play a lot of Madden.
I do.
There has to be a play like that that you run.
Multiple plays.
Third and long. Like, what's your go-to play?
Well, it depends on different things, but I mean, it's usually like there's a kind of, like you can run a bunch set on the left side,
yeah,
and you can send your outside receiver on a streak, your slot receiver on a corner route, like a deep corner, and the inside receiver almost usually a tight end,
yeah,
or like a deep out. And if you do that each time, the go route takes the safety away, the out route takes the corner away, and the corner route's wide open.
One of my favorites to do, this was going back to the NCAA football days, it was like a bunch set on the right, and you would have a hitch route, a post route, mm-hmm. and then the inside receiver would run like a wheel route.
Yeah, yeah.
The wheel route is all-time undefeated in football video games.
They have a play called halfback wheel that's unstoppable in Madden right now.
Well, what always seems to happen is in the video game, the linebacker is running horizontal, chasing the halfback.
Exactly.
And then when the halfback turns,
he's just gone. And the linebacker's still running horizontal.
Is running, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which in real life doesn't always happen, but even in real life, the wheel route, if you run it right, is
pretty hard to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That play, third and long, I would run that play every time.
And it works.
Almost every time.
Yeah.
So maybe Mizzou needs to introduce that into the playbook.
Yeah.
Defensively, Terry Beckner is a guy that I see being a big part of this game for the Tigers. One thing that Florida, again, well, the offense has a lot of problems, but one thing that they tend to struggle with because they don't pass the ball very well as third and longs.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can get ahead of the sticks, so to speak, as Barry Odom likes to say, if you can, you know, force a second and long and maybe a third and long, then I think the defense is going to be in pretty good shape. So that's, for me, I think a lot of that's on Terry Beckner and that defensive line stopping runs and forcing, you know, third and eight, third and seven type situations.
That's where Mizzou really wants to be.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you have a line who I think, you have some pretty talented guys up there on that line,
mm-hmm.
Who can, and just let them just, I mean, you get to third and eight, third and nine even, you just say, just go get the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's where those guys want to be anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So chasing
after somebody.
Yeah, that's where Mizzou wants to be. That's where they need to be.
And even though Missouri hasn't been that good on third down this season, it's still better to be in third and long than third and short.
Yes,
even if you're a team that doesn't defend it very well.
Right.
Because the odds are still better that you'll stop at third and long than third and two.
Yeah.
So I had a conversation with Bill Connolly about that a couple weeks ago. He was, you know, we were talking about that, about how bad Missouri was. It was right after the Georgia game when Fromm was just throwing 15-yard passes on third and 10 on seemingly every drive. And it's still, you want as a defense to be in that position.
Right.
You're not going to just let them gain yards on first and second down. The odds are still in your favor to get the stop in those type of situations. For Florida, key player Malik Zaire, the quarterback, he played 15 games at Notre Dame, completed 59% of his passes for 816 yards, 6 touchdowns, and no interceptions. So in the past, it seems like untested, maybe mysterious players on the other team seem to break out against Missouri.
Yeah,
that seems to be a theme.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't know much about this guy. Like, he hasn't played that much.
Right.
Debut, boom.
Yep,
yeah,
coming out
game.
Party.
So we'll see. We'll see how Malik Zaire does in his first game.
Yeah.
We have some basketball to talk about, too.
You going
to
give you a prediction for football game first?
Yeah, so Mizzou is, last I saw, a 3-point favorite. Might have been 2.5.
I think in our paper it's 3.5.
3.5. I mean,
if you whatever you choose now has to go into our pick'ems.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I can't think about it more on Friday.
Nope. You can't. Nope. You gotta stick with it.
All right. I'm gonna pick Missouri. I picked Missouri to cover last year against LSU. In fact, all 8 people that were on the Tribune staff picked Missouri to cover against LSU, and all 8 were wrong.
Well, I picked just because I think Blake Topmeyer and you guys said, oh, Mizzou will cover. I go, all right, guys.
Experts. Right. Exactly. That was an expert consensus.
Right.
I think they'll cover. It's a coin flip, maybe, yeah. But if I – I'm being forced to pick on the podcast. It's a metaphorical gun to my head on the podcast. I think you kind of have to just rely on logic and what seems to be happening. Florida seems to be falling apart, and their offense, I know, is bad.
Right.
So Drew Locke's playing the best football of his career, counting on him to make it 5 in a row games.
That would give them 4 wins on the year?
They'd be 4-5.
With 3 games left?
3 games coming up at home against Tennessee, the season finale at home. Then you have senior night. Because that game will be at night.
Right.
And then Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt and Arkansas to close the season.
Then you win 2 out of 3 and you're bowl eligible.
That's right. And so, yeah, this is – you win Saturday and you're in
good
decent
shape.
There's still a lot of work to be done winning 2 of those games. Another thought, I mean, that was the talk of the press box after the Connecticut game. It was like right in the mix for a bowl. It'll take some work.
And to think that a few weeks ago they were 1-3 and it was the season's over.
Yeah, 4 home games, 1-3 to start the season, just got killed by Purdue and the season's over. I think there's a lot of people out there that their faith hasn't been earned back yet. Mm-hmm. Missouri hasn't earned their faith back after that Purdue loss. I think that Purdue loss, turned a lot of people off the entire football season. And I don't know if a win against Florida would do it. Maybe. It'd be the biggest win at home in 3 years, probably since 2014. Maybe it will. And if they lose, I don't know if you can get it back, even if you win your last 3 games of the year. My last question about football before we go to basketball. If Mizzou beats Florida this week, how convinced would you be that Missouri would finish the year winning these last 4 games, finishing 7-5?
That's still tough.
Still not convinced?
To win that out? Yeah, no. I don't know. I would feel confident. We've talked about Florida's in turmoil. Tennessee isn't very good. And it sucks to say just because there'd be 1 game left, but I'd feel confident in winning out if they were to go to Vandy and win.
Would you?
I mean, right, like exactly. Anyone could say that, but just like, I don't know. You got 2 very winnable home games. To me, these are games they should win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
you wouldn't be convinced until they
beat
Vanderbilt.
Yeah, at Vandy.
Okay, I guess that's kind of fair. I'm with you. This Missouri team, every time you think you have them figured out, they do something different.
Yeah.
And so it would make sense to me that they get up for this Florida game, recognize the opportunity ahead of them. Drew Locke continues his play, and then they go to Tennessee, and maybe they play a Tennessee team that, you know, is without Butch Jones. I mean, that might happen in the next 7 days.
Right.
And Tennessee's all fired up when they come to Mizzou and win. Or, Vanderbilt, right. You know, Vanderbilt's defense ends up being pretty good against Drew Locke.
Or Mizzou loses the next 2 and then wins 2 on the road. Like, they can do anything.
Yeah, exactly. Any of those options are in play, and a win against Florida wouldn't convince me that.
Right. Either way.
Yeah, that it's.
But I do think winning 2 of these games, it does wonders for Barry Odom's job.
Yeah. He would sleep a lot easier, I think, if they won 2 games, these 2 games at home. We'll kind of see.
We're going to touch on that. We can touch on that later, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to take a bowl game for him to be back or not. That was not the official mandate from Jim Sterk, but at the beginning of the year, that was kind of the thought.
Right.
It's like, Mizzou should make a bowl. Right. And if you would have told a lot of people at the beginning of the year that 5-7 was going to be the number, that wouldn't have been good enough.
Right.
So I don't know. That'll be a conversation for another day.
Right.
But win against Florida, and a lot of those conversations probably won't have to happen.
I agree.
Zoo basketball played Wisconsin.
Zoo basketball. The season's almost here. It's a week and a day.
Yeah. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. I can't wait.
Be a good time.
I'm more excited to just get this Mizzou preview done.
Yeah. So tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah. So we are doing a blowout for the Mizzou basketball preview. We'll do a
blowout.
Exactly.
Fireworks going off.
I'm working on a cover story on the Porters, Porter family. Obviously, everyone knows the story of the Porter family, like how they got back here, all that stuff. But it's just more, I guess, on the four of them. I guess the four siblings, Sierra, Bree, Mike, and Jonte.
Four oldest siblings.
They're
still three?
Three, I think.
Three more Coben's behind them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's Coben and two girls, maybe. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, I guess in the rare opportunity that they have, along with Mike Sr. and Robin Pinchton, with all being a family and kind of being able to impact both sides of the program. So I had a nice sit down with Robin a few weeks ago. We talked a lot. We talked for about 45 minutes about everything. Mm-hmm. So I think that'd be a pretty cool story. And I think especially for the people in Columbia who have seen these kids. I mean, they've watched Sierra and Bree win state championships at Rockbridge, and they've watched Mike and Jonte win at Tolton.
Yep.
So that'd be nice for them, for our readers. And then on the men's side, I also have a feature on Michael Porter Jr. Spent some time talking to him a few days ago, about 10, 15 minutes talking to him, and then went up to Tolton and talked to a few other people about Mike as well. So, again, that's another story I think our readers would like because, I mean, he's a Columbia kid.
Mm-hmm.
He came here in the fifth grade. People, like, you're walking around town, people know, like, people know the athletes in Mizzou, but, like, people in Columbia really truly know Mike.
Yeah.
So that'd be a cool story for our readers.
Your first one-on-one conversation with Mike, right?
Yes.
What were your initial takeaways from your first one-on-one encounter?
Yeah. Very smart kid, very well spoken, and very focused on. I don't want to say his legacy, but the impact he can have on people outside of basketball. It was something we talked about. And it wasn't really what I was going for when we were speaking, but like I mentioned like how long he's wanted to be in the NBA or like what he loves. I asked him what he loves about basketball.
Yeah,
and he said he loved like the impact that he can have on people. With both his faith and kind of and things of that nature. And he's kind of touched on that a little bit, like at Mizzou Madness, he talked about it when we asked him like what it was like to be in that like horde of people signing autographs and just like the impact he's having on kids. And he was talking about like, I remember being that kid.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, that's a piece of Michael people don't really see. Like they see the basketball player, they see this kid who's part of this huge basketball family. But I mean, the fact that he really wants to use basketball as a platform to make an impact with people is pretty interesting.
One thing you mentioned after this interview that made me think, it's a very astute observation. Seeing Michael Porter, you look at him very close.
He's a
man without
any
imperfections.
Flaws. Yeah, none. Hair's perfect. It's not like there's not a piece of hair sticking up.
Yeah.
There's no blemishes anywhere.
And like even the way he speaks.
Yeah.
Doesn't trip over his words very often.
Very, I guess the word's proper in his grammar. Like he doesn't use much slang. Like, his parents did a very good job raising him, obviously. But it just doesn't. I don't want to say
like,
a flawless human being, but like
close,
yeah,
like
exactly.
Meticulous. Yeah. All the details, just very put together.
Yep.
I wonder how much time is spent on all those little details.
Yeah.
Time that I never spent on details.
Same.
You know,
I'm getting out of bed. Shower, shirt, pants, let's go.
I got the basics.
Exactly.
I got the major.
Kind of get out of bed, roll out of bed like that.
Maybe he does.
Maybe
that's
like
what it takes
junior.
To be an NBA first overall draft pick, is you just roll out of bed and it's all put together and you're – I don't think it probably is quite that way.
Right,
Michael Porter's got an insatiable competitive drive and work ethic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is kind of when you mentioned that the other day, it was like, you're right.
Yeah,
pretty well, you know, just it's hard to find flaws in that kid. So, he'll have an opportunity to impress the Mizzou crowd on Friday night.
Right.
So they did play Wisconsin in a closed-door scrimmage. Nobody got to see the game. It was while the Connecticut game, I think, was going on. Mizzou-Connecticut football game was going on.
Yep.
All we got out of it were a couple of
tweets
from the Wisconsin official Twitter account,
right.
which was the final score They lost by
8, I think it was.
Yeah. The shooting percentages for each team and the shooting percentages for Michael and Jonte.
Right. Yeah, and we only got Michael and Jonte because some Wisconsin fan asked where the Porter's playing.
Yeah.
And they tweeted him back. But yeah, it was. I don't know how much you can really take from it. I mean, and the thing about, and we talked about this. They talked about this at media day. The difference between Kansas and Wisconsin are, I mean, those are two absolutely completely different styles of basketball.
Opposite, polar opposite.
Kansas is going to get up and down with you. Wisconsin's get the pass the ball in and walk down the floor. They're going to run the entire shot clock down. They're going to take a very good shot and then make you beat them on defense, which is not very easy to do.
Right.
And for Mizzou, I mean, they want to get out and run. You know, I mean, the Coach Martin mentioned that, like, he made it a focus of they wanted to to get out and run against Wisconsin, and to do and doing that and trying to score and shoot well against a defense that's so disciplined and so, I mean, that defense has just been like killed into their brains from the moment they stepped in. It's difficult. It's not easy for any team in the country to play.
Yeah,
to shoot well against them.
He did say in that press conference on Tuesday that if you miss against Wisconsin, they make it so hard for you on the other end because they don't have quick possessions.
Right.
And, yeah, that's tough. And so if you're setting up a preseason exhibition schedule and you get Kansas and Wisconsin, you see some of the country's best guards and Devontae Graham and Gerald Vick, and then the next day or next game is against – Ethan Happ, who's one of the best post players in the country. You get these differing styles, like you're working both ends of your team, the guards and the forwards. That is the exhibition schedule that you want.
Exactly. It doesn't get much better than doing that.
Yeah.
And especially, I mean, you talked about Ethan Happ, but also as a bookie from Kansas, you're talking about a tremendous start for Jeremiah Tillman to kind of see how he measures up against two of the best bigs in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's going to have – I mean, you're talking about a ton of bigs. Tyler Davis is the one I was thinking of from Texas A&M.
And Robert Williams, too.
Like, that's a juggernaut.
Yeah.
If you're talking about two scrimmages, you lose by 8 to Wisconsin. When they lose by 8 to Kansas? 93-87, was it?
Yeah, 6 points.
6 points. I can't do math. but 6 points. So, I mean, just talking about a 14-point difference.
Yeah.
In those two scrimmages. You're right where you want to be.
Yeah, it's good. And then they'll get another tough one, I believe, this weekend against Missouri State, which is another close scrimmage, so we won't be able to watch. But Missouri State is the overwhelming favorite to win the Missouri Valley Conference this year now that Wichita State is gone. They have a very good team. Definitely the potential for Missouri State to be an NCAA tournament team if they win the conference.
I think this is what you want if you're Mizzou. You want to play three good teams in scrimmages.
And two of those, Kansas and Missouri State, have a lot of desire to beat you.
Right, exactly.
Like, they're going to come at you hard, even in an exhibition. Missouri State is going to come hard at Mizzou, even in a closed-door scrimmage.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you there's Missouri State has a target on Mizzou.
Yeah, always, in every sport.
Yeah, yeah. It's just...
Even in admissions.
Especially, maybe even more in admissions than in athletics.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's going to be a game that means a lot, and so you're going to have pressure in that game. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to, I guess, learn a little bit more. I mean, we won't see, but we'll keep an eye on the stats. We won't make predictions for that game. It's a closed-door scrimmage.
Exactly.
This scenario 365 days ago, that gets talked about a lot.
Right.
Mizzou basketball at this time last year and how different it is. So it's kind of a trope. It's been overplayed. But even the mere thought of spending time discussing
a closed door
scrimmage with the basketball team exhibition is pretty
it's pretty crazy.
Pretty outlandish.
Yeah.
So there was also some news about some recruiting news and some player news that we saw this week.
Yeah, I mean, there have been rumors for since Cardia Gordon, obviously he's one of the best players in the state of Missouri, high school basketball players in the state of Missouri, plays at Webster Groves, won a state championship last year.
Mm-hmm.
In class 5, I think it is. Plays with another person who's been linked to Mizzou, Courtney Ramey, very good point guard out there. Cardia Gordon committed to SLU last year, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
Spring of last year. I think the summer he tweeted something about just SLU equals home or something like that. But there's been rumors that he might flip that commitment to Mizzou, but he's supposedly – according to
Stu Durando from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the SLU beat writer there.
Right, said that Gordon is going to sign his letter of intent to SLU next Wednesday. So I guess that would kind of put to bed those
wow.
you think put to bed those rumors. But
recruiting, you never write anything in ink when it comes to recruiting. Nope. It's always in pencil.
But I guess those that at least quiets those rumors for now.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then also, so CBS Sports every year does a ranking of not only the it's each basketball team 1 to 351, but also the 101 best players in college basketball.
Yeah, and
I'd imagine there's a Missouri Tiger on that list.
Yeah, yeah, it actually was. He was pretty high too.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Michael Porter Jr. was third on their list.
You don't say.
Yeah, he had CBS had Miles Bridges from Michigan State first.
Okay.
And Marvin Bagley from Duke, who reclassified to this class second ahead of him. So I can't remember who four and five were, but I don't know. That was just it was interesting that he was third on that list because there are some dynamite players in the country this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good returners. At I saw a draft mock-up for basketball the other day done by Evan Daniels of, I believe, the Scout Network.
Okay.
Had Michael Porter going fifth.
Yeah, I saw one by Bleacher Report yesterday that had him going fourth.
Yeah.
I can't – you would not get me to believe that there's four amateur players in the world better than Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah. And
I mean, if you're not – when you're talking about a college basketball list, I could see – like, there's an argument for Marvin Bagley, in my opinion. There's an argument for – in terms of the best player in college basketball – for Bridges, like in terms of an NBA prospect, maybe not.
Those are two different things. Yeah.
But to tell me that there's four or five NBA prospects better than Michael Porter Jr. right now, you wouldn't convince me of it.
5,000 to 1 odds of that.
Yeah, exactly. <I'm taking it. laughs>
So the other ones on that list are DeAndre Ayton, Mo Bamba, and then a guy from Europe.
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Luka Doncic, I think.
Yeah, people love him.
They do love him.
They love him.
He's been tearing it up in the EuroLeague for Real Madrid. Maybe Marcus Denman's seen him. Marcus Denman plays for Panathinaikos in Greece.
True.
Yeah, so
they burn flags in the crowds.
They do. That
I remember that video.
The YouTube video of them playing their rivals.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Sprint Center's got nothing on them.
That was what the border war was missing, was
burn
flags,
was
flares and flags the chants throughout the stadium. Any other thoughts on Michael Porter? So you think he's definitely
top
five, top three?
100% top five. I think he's up there. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think there's an argument for between him and Bagley. I think Bridges is probably the better college player.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could put Devontae Graham in that conversation as well. Grayson Allen from Duke.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people you can put in that conversation, but I would take Michael over a lot of those guys.
Who would you pick? Who would you have picked at number one last year?
Coming into the year?
For last season, 2016.
Grayson Allen.
Best player going into the season?
Yeah.
What about at the end of the season? Who had the best year of anybody in college basketball last year?
I'm trying to think.
Frank Mason won Player of the Year.
He had
a
really good year.
Yeah.
Marcus Paige had a really good year at North Carolina.
Jason Tatum had a pretty good year,
but Duke was down all year.
Oh, yeah. What was their final seed in the tournament?
I think they got a one seed.
They played
South Carolina. Like
so they were two because South Carolina was a
10, and they lost South Carolina in the second round.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to go back. I can't think of him. I don't know. I think Frank Mason, I remember being I don't want to say a fan of Frank Mason, but I always enjoyed his
Choose
game.
Your words carefully.
Exactly. I thought he had a really, really good year. I always thought Marcus Paige was just, in my opinion, the most valuable player in the country because of how important he was to North Carolina.
Yeah.
That's where I would lean.
Okay. Funny story, and we'll wrap this up, about that Duke South Carolina game last year. Where were you at when you watched that
Sitting
game?
In my bed.
Sitting at home?
Yep.
Depressed?
Very upset.
One of a few.
That, no, I grew up a Duke fan since
that's the
Jay Will days.
That's what they all say.
No, Jay Will was my favorite player ever.
Okay.
I was a big fan. I remember getting an NBA Live game his rookie year on my PlayStation 2. And only getting it so I could play as Jay Will on the Bulls. Oh, man. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
You think it makes you legitimate, but I don't
it
think
does.
So. 100%. I don't think so.
100%.
I was watching that game in the Phoenix airport coming back from California, and there was a guy sitting next to me, total stranger, and I couldn't tell if he was a fan or not, but the game was on the TV there, and everybody in the airport's watching the game. And every time Duke scored, like in the last 5 minutes, I would just hear him grunting. just Duke.
Everybody hates Duke.
Oh, everybody hates Duke. And at the end of the game, it was just like I looked at him and he kind of had this like kind of smile on his face.
I'm
like,
happy.
Yeah. Exactly. I might be in the airport. Yeah. I might be stranded. I might be stuck in this plane with 150 other people, but I'm going to fly home happy because Duke lost.
I can understand. I can understand the hate.
There's plenty of hate.
Plenty of it. Plenty of it.
All right, thanks for joining us this week. Catch us next week. We'll talk about Missouri's result against Florida. We'll preview the season opener for the basketball team against Iowa State.
Might talk some Mizzou women's basketball.
Yeah, Mizzou women's basketball also opens up the season. See, that's Michael Porter would never have said it like
exactly.
that. Like,
he would have had it perfect.
He should
come be the host of our podcast.
He should. He'd do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
We will also talk about the women's basketball team who opens up their season on Friday as well in Iowa.
Yep.
So a lot to talk about next week. Catch us. We'll also do a podcast and Facebook Live after the Mizzou football game on Saturday from the stadium. So subscribe on iTunes. You can follow Cameron at @CJ_Teague and me at @Daniel_M_Jones and read all of our work in the Columbia Tribune or on the website columbiatribune.com. So thanks for listening.
Be sure and subscribe to Mizzou's Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.